Hello, my friends, and welcome to the DDP, the Deeper Daily Podcast. For the 4th of March, I thank you for joining me today as we are in the book of Ezekiel. Yesterday, we dealt with the false prophet refuted in Ezekiel 18, that famous, fathers have eaten the sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge. Now, there's a lot to say in the coming chapters, but I'm going to skip way ahead to chapter 33. Now, one of the reasons I'm skipping ahead is because, well, there's a lot of darkness that happens between where we were yesterday and where we'll be today, and it's not the end of the darkness, believe me. But it's so dark because it's so contextually set within a rebellious nation of Israel. Israel's degraded, she rebels, she's promised that God will restore her, and then we're introduced to the sword of God in the 21st chapter, a sword that God says will not return anymore. Interestingly, in that chapter, the sword is held in the hand of the king of Babylon, which tells us that the sword of God's judgment in the Old Testament was often an actual sword in the hands of Israel's enemies. And so God was allowing and using those outer nations to teach the lesson that Israel was not learning. Her sins are talked about over and over in, again, in chapter 22, we see a moment where she's thrown into the furnace, not to be destroyed forever, but to be melted like silver, which meant that there was dross to be removed. That's something we see in the ministry of John the Baptist, speaking of Jesus. His fan is in his hand, he's going to purge his floor. And so there was an element of the furnace that Israel was familiar with. And then Israel and Judah are compared to harlot sisters. And there's a very odd chapter in the middle of Ezekiel that talks about her sexual promiscuity. And basically, it's a great metaphor for how she runs from the Lord. There's the symbol of the cooking pot that God gives. And then a tragic moment at the end of 24, where God tells Ezekiel, I'm going to take away the desire of your eyes in one stroke. And then we learn, as the story goes on, that the desire of his eyes is his wife, and that he's instructed to not cry or wail out loud, because God's going to do the same thing to Israel, and they're not to cry because it's what they had coming. It's a tough one to consume, a tough one to take in. And some ways you go, how do we handle this through the new covenant? In some ways, we don't really handle it at all through the new covenant. We simply look at it, realize that it's happening in an old covenant world. It's happening in a world so far from ours that we can only barely understand it, translated out of a language we don't understand, into terminology that we probably can't really capture the fullness of the literature, and we need to leave it at that. Proclamations against Ammon, Moab, Edom, Philistia, Tyre, all kinds, chapter after chapter after chapter of it. And then the fall of Jerusalem, not the AD 70 fall, but the fall that happens as the king, as Babylonians ransack Jerusalem and destroy that city. And that leads me to the scriptures I want to use for you today. In Ezekiel chapter 33, verses 30 to 33, God gives an injunction against what's been happening. And as I read it, it reminded me a little bit of what happens even today in ministry and how they were warned maybe we should be as well. Not that God's going to kill us with the sword, but that we might miss out on something we really need. Ezekiel 33, verse 30, "As for you, son of man, the children of your people are talking about you beside the walls and in the doors of the houses, and they speak to one another, everyone saying to his brother, please come and hear what the word is that comes from the Lord. So they come to you as people do, and they set before you as my people, and they hear your words, but they don't do them. For with their mouth they show much love, but their hearts pursue their own gain. Indeed, you are to them as a very lovely song of one who has a pleasant voice and can play well on an instrument, for they hear your words, but they don't do them. And when this comes to pass, surely it will come, then they will know that a prophet has been among them. And so Israel's ruin, Judah's fall, is an inevitability, but God identifies his people as hearing the words. This interesting illustration to me. You are to them as one with a very lovely song, who has a pleasant voice and can play well on an instrument. They hear it, but they don't do it. In other words, they're entertained by you, but they don't pay attention. I don't want to see ministry as mere entertainment, but sometimes it feels like it becomes that way. I hope we feed and feast on that which is good instead of just become entertained by ministry in general. It is easy to sort of fall into that pattern, that sort of relaxing pattern with your community, where you're just in that mode of just enjoying them and them enjoying you and enjoying the songs and enjoying the sermon, and then walking away and feeling as if just being there met some sort of spiritual obligation. And I don't think being there meets some sort of spiritual obligation. I think being there is important because of what is offered to you by the community and by what you offer the community, but also what can be deposited into you by the person who shepherds your soul, who is gifted to share those things with you that make a difference in your walk. We can't treat the receiving of the word as a lovely song by one with a pleasant voice. We hear it, but we don't do it. And if we ever could, if we need a New Testament verse on it, James does tell us not to just be hearers of the word, but doers as well. And I know James is early in the canon, and I know James doesn't walk in the grace revelation that Paul does, but we still shouldn't discount it as pretty good advice. Walk out what's being done in. Paul had a similar statement. Work out with fear and trembling what God has worked in you. And may we enjoy our communities and enjoy our services, but never so much that it's simply an entertainment and not a chance to hone who we are based upon the community around us and the word being poured into us. I hope that the DDP is playing a role in your life. I've never tried to make it a source of entertainment, but rather a little nugget that might get you through another one of your moments, another one of your situations, and that together you and I can grow, not because one has a lovely song and a pleasant voice, but because we're listening and we're applying these words to our hearts. Have a wonderful day. God bless.